Today on Analog Out, we've got an Xbox Live on Nintendo Switch rumor. Holy cow, we got Cuphead possibly coming to Switch. We're going to talk about the old Switch tax, and we're going to give a goodbye salute to the old Reginator. Tune in! Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Out. I'm sorry you have to listen to us for a 41st time, but this is episode 41. Thank you for tuning in. I'm here with my buddy and co-host Bowman.
Hey everybody.
My name's Pat, and we're going to talk about some video game news. We're going to get right into it here.
Let's do it.
We've got a big one here. I read this one on analogoutmedia.com. I don't know if you saw that article.
I did see it.
Xbox Live heavily rumored to come to Switch, and not just Xbox Live, but also the Xbox Game Pass. Now, Bowman, the Xbox Game Pass, you know what that entails?
Yes, it's a lot like PS Now and that you... Well, as it stands right now on the PC and the Xbox console, it is just a service where you basically... It's the Netflix of Xbox games, but... You don't stream them, you download them.
Right.
So for this Nintendo Switch one, I'd assume they're going to go toward a stream route.
Sure. So, but let's focus on the actual service first. Sure. It is $10 a month, and it essentially includes every single major Xbox release.
Yeah, every major title that, especially ones that Xbox, like that Microsoft directly produced.
We're talking about Forza. We're talking about Halo. We're talking about that one you play as an animal, Lucky's Tale.
Yeah, so these games come out at launch, and they're already available in the Game Pass because Xbox is just desperate for people to play these games.
Right.
So it's a really enticing service. So I don't use it, but...
Basically, what we're trying to say here, folks, is that pretty soon you're going to be able to play Halo on the Nintendo Switch!
It's perfect for the Switch.
You're gonna get to blam blam those aliens.
Blam blam them.
Blam blammo. Yeah. So this is crazy news. This might be, if this were to happen, I think I'm gonna go ahead and say this is gonna be the strangest and biggest collaboration between two competing console manufacturers ever.
I'd say so. At least while a console is currently. You know, still being sold. Like,
right.
It's not like Microsoft just kicked the bucket and then went with Xbox and went, all right, well, fine, we'll offer a service now. No, like, they're still highly invested in being in consoles, but they're highly invested in being a service for other mediums as well, which is the Nintendo Switch is just
it's bizarre.
That I never thought would happen.
It's bizarre for sure. So, essentially, what the report is saying is that you're going to have full access to all the games on Xbox Game Pass, and it's a special streaming service that uses an algorithm that Microsoft has developed themselves, essentially. And they talked a little bit about this, maybe at E3 last year, I think. I forget when it was, but I saw a press conference, and they had actually touched upon how they were... Oh, it was when they debuted the... system that's going to be running the games on phones and tablets and things like that. Same exact idea. And they had talked about how they had developed this compression system and streaming service themselves. So this is just bizarre. You're almost at a loss for words because what this is telling me basically is you will now be able to play basically all Xbox games as well as all Nintendo Switch games on the Switch with very little issues as far as compatibility goes and quality. Which then begs the question, why would I ever buy an Xbox?
I mean, you didn't have reason that before.
Exactly, and now... If I'm a person who's looking for a new console, let's say I don't have a console from this generation, and I go, okay, well, I got the PS4 or the Switch or the Xbox. Well, really, why would you ever choose the Xbox in that situation when you could go with the Switch and be like, I get both libraries?
Well, maybe the Xbox will have a Nintendo streaming service.
No, absolutely not. That will not happen under any circumstances.
I don't know.
Now, here's the biggest benefit for me that I see, and also the, just the general consumer. Xbox Live on the Switch. Now, we talked about this a while back, and it was just kind of like, oh, well, there's going to be some like games that are multi-platform that might have like Xbox Live built into them. Well, now that this is happening, assuming it does happen, this is a whole other can of worms. When we first reported on Xbox Live, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, so it's like, you know, Rocket League or whatever, you'll be able to connect with your Xbox Live friends on there. But if they're bringing Xbox Game Pass to the Switch, I'm thinking Xbox Live is going to be its own standalone service on the console at that point. And that might be the real benefit here for Nintendo specifically, more so than the games, is, hey, we have probably the best and most fleshed out online service on consoles. You've struggled with online for over a decade now. Use Xbox Live. Like, you obviously, you guys don't know what you're doing. We do. We'll give you Xbox Live. You put our games on your consoles and give us a 50% share or whatever of the sales, and everybody's happy. For, I mean, the only loser here is Xbox, Microsoft. Nintendo has, I can't imagine them being like, no, to that deal. Just being like, nah, we don't want more games on our system. Because like I said earlier, it gives people almost zero reason to buy anything other than a Switch.
Yeah.
So this is super exciting news. Where are you at, Almost?
I'm excited, but a part of me is thinking that we always say that if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah.
So I'm not completely convinced by this. I think there's got to be something to it. And another concern I have is the Nintendo Switch speeds that it gets, even when you do have a smooth connection.
So you mean your internet speed?
Yeah. So how well will this internet, how well will these services run on the average user?
Well, PS4 streaming, and I don't know for a fact. I'm not sure if the Xbox game app is out yet on phone and things like that, but they've been doing it for a while. I mean, apparently the like Resident Evil,
yeah,
stuff, Resident Evil 7 and Monster Hunter and stuff run really smoothly on the Switch over in Japan. So they've already done it. I think it's just, it's not going to work for you, but because you don't have good internet. But I think for me, it'll be fine. And for people who have a decent connection, it'll work fine.
Mm.
So I think I've read recently that the average speed needed to stream even 4K content, and obviously the Switch isn't 4K. I think that the speed needed to stream like 4K movies and stuff is at a smooth connection. It's like 25 megabits, which is low nowadays.
It is, yeah.
It's not that low for the Switch because the Wi-Fi chip inside of it isn't very good.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But you definitely get over 25 if you have a, you know, if you have a 100 megabit connection, you're going to get 25 on your Switch. Yeah, plus you can get a USB adapter for $25. They could even sell a bundle kit where they sell a Switch branded Xbox controller with the USB Ethernet adapter.
Yeah.
For $50 or whatever. So yeah, so on top of this, we also got news that, and this is this, so after this news broke, an actual pre-order leaked for this on a French website, which it seems like the French always leak this stuff on their gaming websites, and it's always Nintendo of Europe goofing and leaking stuff on accident and things like that. It always seems to be Europe who doesn't give a shit about secrecy when it comes to these things. So the other rumor was that Microsoft is going to bring Cuphead and Ori and the Blind Forest to Switch as well.
Actual full-fledged actual games, releases,
yeah, not releases, streaming. Not streaming,
yeah.
This is awesome. I mean, I would love that because
I, yeah.
Yeah. I played some Cuphead. I think I pirated it at first or something, but I have played a decent amount of it, but the only thing that's kept me from buying it really is that I don't have an Xbox. So yeah, I'd be super excited about that. And then Ori and the Blind Forest is supposed to be one of the best indie games that have released in the last few years. So
mm-hmm. I'm excited about both of those if they come true. I mean, I played and beat Cuphead, and I would buy it again.
Yeah, and the great thing about it is too, when you put it that way, Microsoft just bought up all these development studios that make indie games like that. So when you're talking about an Xbox and Nintendo partnership here, you're not just limited to the streaming Game Pass games. They could release actual games to the console.
There's really no reason not to at this point. I mean, they own Minecraft.
Yeah, and Minecraft is on all those. I think, well, so Microsoft is a software company first and foremost.
Yes.
If they could, and I think I said this to you, if they could, they'd sell Windows to Mac users.
Yeah.
They don't care about the hardware. They care about getting their software out.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a no-brainer here. I think they just want to get their software out to as many people as possible. The money coming in from Xbox Live subscriptions, that's a big earner for them. That type of stuff. They're probably not earning much money at all on Xbox One X's. They don't care about hardware, I don't think. They never have. If they could, you know.
Didn't they sell the Xbox original at a loss back then?
Probably. Often companies will do that, especially major conglomerates like Sony and Microsoft. Nintendo can't really do that because their only business is making consoles and games, but
yeah.
Microsoft makes OSs and Sony makes TVs and
Xbox sold at a loss. 360 didn't work, so they had to send out a bunch of new ones. So they're used to it. Why don't they just we've been talking about this all along. Every game commentator, journalist is talking about this, where Xbox and gaming in general will just become a service. In terms of, it doesn't really matter where it's on. We've talked about this a billion times. So seeing this actually leak into Switch territory is just, if it ends up being true, it's huge and highly, both companies stand to gain a lot.
I've been saying for a long time that I think Microsoft has been moving towards just a software type thing, and that they will have Xbox branded computers and, you know, game boxes, but in the end, their main goal is just
push that,
get the brand and the software out there, get the Xbox Live subscriptions, you know.
And, you know, a lot of these major indie, as you brought up earlier, all these major indie titles on the Switch have been doing in very well, and including the physical releases. When they come out, everyone goes nuts and wants to buy them. And so why not sell these games all over again, reach another audience? I mean, I understand if you want to make these products available as an exclusive thing for your own console at first, but later on, there's really no reason not to just go ahead and release it.
Yeah.
Nintendo, it makes sense. Like, they're never going to release their major properties on other consoles because they don't need to.
Yeah.
People are buying their console.
All right, so moving on. The next major piece of news this week is a bit of a sad one. Our old pal, Reggie Fils-Aimé, is going bye-bye.
Did he pass away?
No, he's retiring.
Oh, okay.
He is quitting Nintendo. I don't know why anyone would ever do that, but he's going away.
He's retiring in April, and Doug Bowser will be taking his place.
Yeah, and everyone's freaking out. Oh, his name's Bowser.
I've known about this guy forever, and I don't understand why his name's so shocking now.
I don't know. It is funny, though.
A little bit.
A guy named Bowser is now ahead of Nintendo.
I just thought it was funny when he was
there's a really good, he made like a picture on Instagram or like a video or whatever of him being like, thanks, guys, for, and in the background.
Mario and Luigi tied up in the back, yeah.
That was good. That was a nice touch.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they lean on that for the next few years and they make jokes about that and stuff, that'll be good.
Well, you know, he's entering Reggie's spot.
He has big shoes to fill.
Big shoes to fill. But, you know, they're setting him right with the memes. And that's what it's really all about, everybody.
Yeah.
Are the memes.
Yeah. So,
but anyways, so what did old Reggie mean to you?
Ma'am, Reggie is basically, in my mind, he is the face of Nintendo.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because he has almost no say in much of anything that goes on because he's president of the American Nintendo. So he doesn't, you know, they have their say over in Japan, and he basically just complies and executes it here. But just his charisma, his attitude, and he's always the one who speaks at E3, usually. Some of his E3 moments are classics that people know from, you know, not even more so than just Nintendo fans. Everybody knows these jokes, these memes, and these spoofs, and these goofs, and... He is Nintendo to me. He's the face of Nintendo, even more so than Miyamoto. Everyone knows who Miyamoto is, knows his genius, but he is like, Miyamoto is the director, and Reggie is the star.
Yeah.
He was Nintendo. He's the face of Nintendo, for sure.
It's a huge loss.
Yeah. He's just he has a personality, and he's just so likable. And for me, what Reggie means to me is like when I first he came out at a time when watching videos on the internet was just becoming a thing because the speeds were getting good enough that you could watch videos. And also, it was around the time when, like, G4 was around, so they would, like...
And they were covering, like...
They would cover E3 and things like that, so...
Yeah.
His appearance coincided almost directly with when the average consumer was able to, like, watch E3 and things like that. So that's why when I say Reggie was the face of Nintendo to me, that's why I say that, because he's basically the first... face that I saw, you know, that was like, hey, this is the cool shit that's coming out. And he always had a certain way about him that he is a businessman. I still wonder, and the fact that I even have to ask this question shows why he's so great, is because I've always wondered, does he really play the games? Because he's always said, oh, I'm a gamer, and my favorite game is Link to the Past, and I used to play it on my Super Nintendo and stuff. But, you know, he's a grown man, and he was also like a CEO of a major corporation. So I'm like thinking to myself, like, did he really play the games? But he always seems so interested and passionate about them and stuff that I still have to question. If it was anybody else, I'd be like, yeah, I'm sure, pal. But with him, I still question if he actually plays the games or not, if he's actually a fan, if he's still there playing New Leaf on his 3DS. And so he had this certain charisma where he's a businessman first and foremost, a CEO. He worked for Procter & Gamble, and he was also a senior director at Pizza Hut, where he was the guy who came up with the Big New Yorker, if you remember that one.
And the Bigfoot Pizza.
Yeah, that one's not around anymore. The Big New Yorker might still be, I don't know, but...
Yeah.
So he was a businessman first and foremost, and he was just there as a numbers guy or whatever. He's a CEO, you know, he's a president. And, but he brought with him a sense of swagger and personality and, just seemed to really enjoy the fans and really enjoy the passion. You know, people, I'm sure, like Pizza Hut, but there's nothing like, you know, video game fans and such. You know, nobody freaks out and goes, oh my God, it's the Pizza Hut CEO.
Yeah.
And stops him on the street. And who knows? Who knows if he actually realized that the job was going to be like that before he accepted it. But I'm sure that was a pleasant surprise to him. And you really felt that through his attitude, and he seemed to really enjoy doing the directs and being a big face for the company. So, and I don't know if he was necessarily knew that going into it, that was going to be a big part of it, because it, when he started, that wasn't part of it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You didn't really see that in the video game industry back then.
Right.
I mean, we just saw press releases back then, and like press conferences were just reserved for the press. Like, yeah. The people didn't really see them. So, yeah, I think he really created that role. Not that this is the first time a CEO has had super personality. I mean, you can think of like Steve Jobs is sure. Probably like one of the big ones, but he brought it into the video game industry in such a way that has never been able to be properly emulated at all. I feel like when you watch a lot of press conferences, you always feel like these CEOs and whatever marketing PR people who walk out on stage, they try to capture that same attitude that Reggie has at times.
Right.
And they just... That one little piece is just missing. And Reggie has such a way of delivering things where it sounds so scripted, but at the same time has so much personality.
Well, he has that X factor.
Yeah.
And it is scripted, but it's like, yeah. It's almost as if like he wrote the script himself.
Exactly.
So the part of the script where he's supposed to be passionate or whatever, he actually is. That's not a scripted part.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, you know, when you're in front of a giant audience, you need a script to read off of.
Right.
Or teleprompter.
I just mean like sometimes his delivery can be so robotic, but at the same time, not.
You could tell he believes what he's saying.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and he had some rough years that he had to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's a major part of Nintendo. He oversaw the release of the DS,
mm-hmm.
the 3DS, the Switch, the Wii, the Wii U.
More like P-U.
Yeah, more like poo-poo. So he was a major part, and he will be missed. This guy, Bowser, has some serious, I would not want to be in his position right now.
No.
He's got so much to prove.
Yeah, it's going to be really tough for him because anything he does, everyone, even if he tries to capture that same magic that Reggie has, people are going to be critical of him.
I picture everyone just being like, man, he's not Reggie.
It's not Reggie, though.
Yeah. So, but it is nice that, so I would like to finish on, Reggie said that he was retiring. He's not quitting. He's not accepting another job somewhere else. He's retiring to spend more time with his family and play New Leaf on his 3DS. So, I like seeing that because I like the guy, and I feel like you'd never see that. You never see an executive at a big company who's making tons of money and the company's doing well just be like, you know what? Enough is enough. I have enough money. I'm still young. Let me go enjoy my life and spend some time with my family and, you know, enjoy the spoils of my success. You don't really see that. There never seems to be a limit to once you get into that corporate environment. Enough is never enough. So, you know, it was bittersweet, but I was happy to be like, oh, that's nice. He's retiring. He's spending time with his family, his wife, and his kids, and so on and so forth. And that's, you know, it's not like with what's his face? Drawing a total blank now. It's not like with Iwata, where he fucking died.
Yeah,
he got cancer, or even anyone who's just like gets sick, or they're so old that they just can't do the job anymore. You know, he's seems pretty young. I don't know. Maybe he puts on a lot of makeup and dyes his hair and stuff, but he seems pretty young. And it was nice to just be like, oh, he's leaving on a high note. Instead of he leaves disgraced, or he leaves because he's not healthy.
He's only 57.
Yeah, so that's what I was gonna guess. He's in his 50s. Yeah. So if he truly is retiring and not just taking a higher paying job with a different company, then good for him.
Yeah,
I was happy to hear that. So yeah, bye bye Reggie. We will miss you. And you know what? I don't think this will be the last we see of him.
No.
I would be very surprised if he doesn't show up as like a guest presenter or something at some conventions or whatever. some expos and things like that.
He had so much fun. I would be surprised if he would even. I'm sure that they would give him the opportunity and him turning it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
If Mother 3 ever gets localized, he needs to be the one that announces it.
I'd be very surprised if this is the last we hear of him. So, yeah, we will miss you. All right, so let's talk about the old Switch tax while we're on the topic of Nintendo.
Yeah.
What is the Switch tax, Bowman?
Well, when the Switch first came out and we started seeing all these listings for games that were available on other consoles, people started noticing that a lot of these games were priced higher than the other console releases. Like, so for example, like you'll see a game come out and on PlayStation 4 and Xbox it's like $50, and then the Switch would be like $60. So this term, the Switch tax, came about because, as it turned out, a lot of third-party developers commented on it and said that this is to basically counteract the cost of the cartridges.
Right.
Because we're excited to have cartridges, but at the end of the day, they cost more money to make than a standard Blu-ray disc.
I don't think they cost $10 more to make.
No, sure. I'm just saying that this is what we're being told as to why that there is a higher cost to it. I do know that there is higher cost in terms of how much storage each cartridge has, and sometimes it can be more expensive.
So the problem with the Switch tax, though, is that regardless of the size of the cartridge,
yeah, we would still see games come out.
It's always $10.
We would still see games come out, and the way we really counteracted back then was that Amazon had their discount, and then Best Buy had their discount, which sucks because both of those services are over now, unless you bought Best Buy Gamer Pass way ahead. So anyways, so the reason we're talking about this today is because a recent title is actually going to be cheaper. Bloodstained Ritual of the Night, supposedly, and I'm pulling this out from I got this information from a NintendoLife.com article. So, I also noticed the listing on Amazon. It's actually $10 cheaper than the other versions. You see them on Xbox One and PlayStation 4, and those titles are cost $50, and the Switch version is $40. So, I don't know. How do you feel about this, Pat? Do you think the Switch tax is over?
No, because they, I think it was the developers that came out and already just said, yeah, we're not going to charge the extra $10 for the Switch tax.
They're just going to eat the cost?
Right. And, well, I don't think they're going to eat the cost. I think just the margins will be slightly less. But we're talking, I think that cartridges cost dollars. I don't think they cost $10. I think they probably cost $2 to produce in a mass quantity. So I think, or even like, let's say the disc costs $2 to make and the cartridge probably costs $4 to make, something like that. I don't think it's a $10 surcharge. Also, I read before the podcast that the PS4 and Xbox One, that's an error. They will be $40, just like the Switch. So it's going to be all the same price. As far as the Switch tax goes, yeah, I think it's bullshit. I think that, first of all, you've got the hottest selling console right now, and it has been since it came out. So that's A. B, if you're an indie game developer, you're essentially guaranteed that your game is going to sell more on Switch than it is for PS4. I think those things should be enough incentive for you to release the game at the same price as the other games. Sure, the profit margins aren't as high, but that's where the incentive comes in, where it's like, well, we won't make as much money, but we'll sell way more copies. We're going to make money regardless. Do I think that they shouldn't charge anything extra? Probably not. I mean, if it's a $20 game that you're making and, you know, the cartridge costs $5, then fine. Charge at cost, though, for the $5. And I just find it very hard to believe that, especially even after 2 years, where they've gotten better and more efficient at making the cartridges, and the technology's probably gotten cheaper, I find it very difficult to believe that it still costs them $10.
$10, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's bullshit. And I think a lot of things in the gaming industry are bullshit like that. I just to go on a quick tangent here, controllers are the same way. PS3 controllers, you know, if you buy them now, they're the same price that they were in 2006. That's bullshit. You're telling me that it costs the same now in 2019 that it costs in 2006 to make this controller? I doubt it. They never go down in price. So I think it just becomes a standard of the industry, and it works both ways too. The price of video games went up with the Xbox 360 to $60 a game. They used to be $50 a game typically, and they haven't gone up at all, even though the production of the games have gone up, you know, astronomically. They cost hundreds. It's like a movie now where it costs hundreds of millions of dollars and thousands of staff, and they are afraid to raise the price from $60 because people have become accustomed to it now, and they don't want to raise it because they think it'll turn people off, and it probably will. So it goes both ways. I think a lot of it is just comfortability, and I think a lot of it is just industry standard, and it becomes a standard, and people don't want to change it because they're afraid of causing waves. So that's my opinion on the Switch tax. I don't think it'll go away. I think that much like the $60 change from the $50 with games in 2005, you're going to see the same thing where it just becomes standard, and Switch games are $10 more. And in the long run, maybe it's worth it because you're getting two games in one. You get a portable version and a console version. And as Vita owners and PS4 owners, we know that that's a better alternative because a lot of Vita games come out on PS4 and it's just like great pleasure. Which one do I pick?
Yeah.
So this kind of eliminates that choice and gives you best of both worlds. And if that costs an extra $10, then I guess so be it. But, you know, it is what it is.
Well, what's funny is that a lot of these games I see come out, they'll have these higher price points, and then it's not long after when you start seeing these drastic price drops.
Yeah.
I know it's the same for any type of game release, but still, it makes you just wonder.
I mean, I've...
Where you see a game that's been out for, like, less than a year, and they mm-hmm. thought to make this game more expensive for this system, and then they're already just chopping the prices apart.
Yeah. Well, that's a fault on the consumer, and less so the... Because they're not the ones who even choose the prices. It's like Amazon and stuff, who are like, all right, well, we bought these 10,000 right. copies of games from these publishers, and we've had it for a year now, and they haven't sold out, so we'll lower the price a month later. Still haven't sold out, they lower the price a month later. Still haven't sold out, and then the next thing you know, you're getting Sushi Striker for 3DS for $12.
Yeah.
So that's not the developer publisher's fault. I think that's just economics. It works out great for me because I basically become an expert at buying games when they're at their lowest point. And I've gotten a lot of really cool games, especially on Switch, where when you take the quote-unquote Switch tax into account, when you're talking about the case, the artwork, and the cartridge, there's some games I've gotten for basically nothing, because I got Yoku's Island Express for $12.
Yeah.
So if it really does cost $10 to produce those cartridges and a few dollars for the case and everything like that, the game was essentially just... they didn't even make any money off of me, basically. Mm-hmm. So it is what it is. If you're upset about it like that, you just got to be patient then, I guess.
Yeah,
you have to take that gamble and maybe not get the game.
That's what I always just tell people, or what I just tell myself, is that I just don't buy games. I mean, at launch, I mean, we talk about this all the time. Like,
if it's a game I'm just dying to play, I'll...
Yeah. But there are always ways to get your game much cheaper than what you...
You could steal them.
That is a way, but that has a price too. You can go to jail. So, yeah, I mean, I've always been kind of against the Switch tax, and the only way I've really been avoiding it is through these discount platforms. Luckily, I'm fortunate enough that my brother still has the Best Buy Gamer Pass. That's usually how I avoid it if I want to buy a game brand new.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not fully avoiding it, because on like a $40 game, if it's normally $30, you use the Game Pass, you only get like $5 off. You're still paying a $5 premium there, Chief.
True. I mean, my way to combat it, rather.
Yeah.
So.
Are you a big fan of Switch tax, man? You like paying that extra $10?
No, not a big fan of it.
All right. We got a mysterious placeholder. On Amazon.
Yeah.
By who other than our favorite game developer and home run hitter every time out of the park, Bethesda. never made a mistake in their lives, and they've got a mysterious placeholder on Amazon. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Bowman.
Well, it's just goes along with the rumors that there may be a Fallout 3 and a Fallout New Vegas remaster.
I'd be excited for those.
Yeah, those are both great titles in the series.
Would have loved, and it's much like their other games, Skyrim and all that. They're kind of janky. Would very much benefit from a remaster where they kind of polish it over. You get like a definitive edition. Unfortunately, there's no placeholder for a Switch version, only the PS4, PC, and Xbox One. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Switch comes out too, and they just... Bethesda's been big supporters of it.
Yeah.
So, Amazon doesn't often just goof and put up fake placeholders for games, typically. So, we can assume that in the near future, there's going to be... Oh, no, you know what? Also, Bethesda also put up a teaser video with like a countdown.
Yeah.
So they are going to be announcing something very soon, and Amazon has a placeholder, and everyone...
Fallout 77.
Fallout 77. $77 is what we're going to need for you to make the game playable. We've got a $77 DLC that gets rid of the bugs. I'm sure that would go over real well.
Hey, why not at this point?
Man, what is even going on with that game nowadays?
I don't know.
It's just as barren as its overworld.
It's its story.
Yeah. So, you folks should be expecting some major Bethesda announcement, probably a New Vegas and Fallout 3 remaster. Fallout 3 was my personal favorite, even though a lot of major Fallout fans are not big fans of. But the reason they're not is not that it's not a good game. It's because the story is quote unquote stupid. It's what I've heard a lot from a lot of fans, and I get it now that I've played more of the series. But Fallout 3 was my first Fallout that I really dug into. I had played a little bit of the older ones on PC at like friends' houses and stuff, but I never actually like played them. So being my first one that I really played, the story wasn't stupid to me because I never played the other ones. But in the grand scheme of things, the complaint is like things don't really make sense or add up in the timeline and such in the whole universe. For me, it didn't matter because I'd never played the other ones. So Fallout 3 is my personal favorite. It is, but New Vegas is fantastic too. And that's most people's favorite story-wise and such. Both are great games. Definitely check them out if and when they are announced. What about you? You going to get them?
Maybe.
You going to get them?
Maybe.
Did you play the other ones?
I played New Vegas.
Did you beat it?
No. When I played New Vegas when it came out, I mean, because it was on the 360 era, and that's the time where I had a 360 and a PS3 and all that stuff, but I was paying attention to gaming, but I really wasn't gaming that much.
Mm-hmm.
So I played it and picked it up, but my roommates at the time, I mostly just watched them play it.
Oh, okay.
But it was a good game.
Cool. Good investment.
Yeah.
All right. We've got a new trailer for the Twilight Zone. The remake, the new show. Have you seen any of this
stuff? No, I haven't seen this.
Really? Not at all?
Nothing.
All right. Watch it. All right. You watched it.
I watched the trailer.
Did you notice the little Easter egg in there?
Yeah, the on the beach. Yeah, they washed up.
Hopefully there's not too much of that.
Also, there was the Devil's Box, too.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah. There was a bunch of nods. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you see Get Out?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think about that?
I liked Get Out.
Yeah, did you think it was a movie of the century? Like,
no,
it seemed to get garnered.
No,
because I saw it, I was like, yeah, it was good.
It's exactly where I was with it. It was fun. It was original, but it wasn't anything like, oh my god.
So you're a big Twilight Zone boy.
Yeah, I love Twilight Zone. I watched it a lot as a kid. We had like a whole VHS collection of it.
Nice. I had to watch it. This is how old school I am. my most of my Twilight Zone experiences when I was young, the way I got into it and would watch it is whenever I would go, I would used to stay the summers in New York City with my uncles, and we would go to the TV and Radio Museum, which is, I believe, no longer operating. And when you were done going through the museum, there was a section where you would sit in these cubicles and you were allotted 2 hours. And there was like just a catalog of VHSs and stuff of old TV shows and whatnot. And that's what I would watch when we would go there.
Wow.
Old Twilight Zone episodes. So that's how I got into it, because either we didn't know about it, my family didn't care about it, or we just didn't have the money to be buying, like, because you know how VHS sets went. They were like, you get like 2 or 3 episodes on a tape. So a series would, you know, there's like, I forget how many episodes there are of The Twilight Zone. It's like 60-something or whatever. It would cost like, that would be like a $500 set to get all the tapes or whatever. So I would go and to the TV and Radio Museum and watch them there. And then when DVDs came out, I would watch. I got some DVDs and things like that. But yeah.
They're all on Netflix now, aren't they?
I don't think they all are. I want to say that the later seasons are not on there.
Mm.
Anywho, we're both big Twilight Zone fans. I think the obvious thing that we should touch upon is that this show is being made because of the popularity of Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Let's be realistic here.
Yeah.
And my biggest concern is that they try too hard to be Black Mirror. Now, thankfully, I didn't see any technology stuff in the trailer, really.
Yeah.
And my hope for the series is that it leans way more towards supernatural stuff than a mysticism than technology dystopian future type shit. Another big problem that I am worried about is that there is more political commentary than there is social commentary, given the times and also the creator, the host. I mean, there was a lot of political debate around his movie when it came out.
Yeah.
And that's not, to me, what Twilight Zone is about.
So, there's been episodes.
There was like some. That. There was some, but it was like, it was very few and far between, and it wasn't very heavy-handed. Or if it was, it was like, there's a difference between modern-day American political commentary and, like, the scare of nuclear war, which is what their, you know, political commentary would be about. You know,
or there was the racist episode. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'd be fine if there was a episode like that.
Yeah.
What
you're just saying that you hope the show isn't just all
I hope the show
political
isn't
political conversation.
I hope this show isn't political commentary Black Mirror.
Right.
Because Black Mirror is already just like technological commentary show that ripped off Twilight Zone, basically. It's like evil tech Twilight Zone is what it is.
Yeah.
So my concern, when I see Jordan Peele doing it, and whatever your political standings are, or your beliefs or whatever are, that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. But if you saw the movie and you saw what people were saying about it afterwards and stuff, you know exactly.
Well, and how much praise he got for that movie too.
Right.
That's going to affect your
exactly.
Work.
So, if you've seen the movie and you saw the commentary on it and stuff, then you know what I'm getting at. And I just worry that that's what the show is going to be. So, as long as it's not, and it focuses more on mysticism and supernatural and stuff, and it's competently made, I'll be a happy boy. What are your thoughts on the trailer and your hopes for the show?
I'm nowhere with it right now, just because the original show is there and it's great.
Yeah.
I have no problem rewatching that show. There's plenty of episodes. And there's been later reboots of Twilight Zone before,
yeah,
and they weren't good. So, I mean, they could potentially just end up right back where these were, where they tried to do this. And it's really, I mean, you could repeat this conversation a lot about any kind of remakes, but I think it really,
it's going to be very difficult.
It's just not easy to recapture Twilight Zone at all. It's just not something you can do, because it's something that has been, it's all about the times, the format, Rod Serling. And I'm not trying to sit here and just say that, like, you can't even attempt a remaster, but the thing is,
replacing Rod Serling as the host of the Twilight Zone is like trying to replace Christopher Lloyd as Doc in Back to the Future.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, they're inseparable, and I'm not trying to say that this show could end up being good in its own right. It's just that when you are saying you're coming out with a Twilight Zone remake, you know, a new one and everything, you are putting that brand on there, and he's
wearing the same suit.
Yeah,
and
you're banking people to go, oh, I remember Twilight Zone. I like that show a lot.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing to yourself. So at the end of the day, whether you like it or not, you're going to be compared to the original, and there is no comparison. It doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter what you do. You could create a good show, but at the end of the day, this could just be any regular drama with just another old name just slapped on top of it.
One of the things that I really saw in the trailer that I was concerned about is, and it's might just be in a non-issue, I don't know, but Twilight Zone was known for picking actors that were unknown
mm-hmm.
at the time and ended up becoming known. This show is using all already established, like, stars.
A-listers and all that.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird. It takes you out of it. It's kind of weird seeing fucking Tracy Morgan with his dumb, goofy voice and stuff, like, in a Twilight Zone episode, like, trying to...
Because these are supposed to just be run-of-the-mill, everyday people that you
right.
see on the screen.
Yes.
That's what makes them so disturbing at times, because mm-hmm. you picture yourself or someone you know
yep.
in these scenarios.
Man, I really want to watch Twilight
Zone. I know, that's all I thought when I watched it, was like, oh, I kind of want to watch Twilight Zone now. I don't really care about whatever this is.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Whatever. I mean, we could eat our own shoe, so to speak, whatever the expression is, later, you know, eat our own words.
Yeah.
Later down the road. And it could end up being good, but as it stands right now, I just...
I mean, I'm kind of
yeah.
whatever on it.
Yeah,
I hope
whatever.
It's good, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's not.
Yeah.
One last thing I'd like to bring up on it is that it's streaming on CBS All Access. It's not airing on TV.
Yeah.
These companies are really, really pushing these streaming service is hard.
God.
And also, it is TV mature. That's part of the reason why they're streaming it and not putting it on. Because CBS is like one of the national cable TVs or whatever. So they don't put anything risque on those shows. I guess the new Star Trek is also on the CBS All Access only, not on cable. And they've shown like nudity and stuff on there. So... yeah, that's just something of note. I don't know where cable is really headed, the future of TV shows and such, because
strange.
It seemed so clear a few years ago.
Yeah.
And then of course every greedy money grubbing company was like, "Oh, Netflix doing good.
Let's do our own streaming service."
Yeah, and now it's like maybe even worse than cable was.
Yeah.
There's so many, and it's so fragmented, and none of these companies, they all charge about the same as Netflix or near that. And it's just like Netflix and Hulu offer so much more than these.
That's the
places.
Problem
yeah.
is that these services are not competitive enough.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe
they can't be.
Like, let's say the CBS All Access. Okay. For Netflix, I get hundreds of TV shows and thousands of movies for $10 a month. So I don't know how much CBS All Access is, but let's say it's like $8, all right? If I only if I'm getting thousands of movies and hundreds of shows on Netflix, and I only want to watch Twilight Zone and Star Trek on CBS All Access, I'd pay like $2, not the same as Netflix.
Well, here's the price point: $6 a month for limited commercials, and then $10 a month for the All Access ad free.
Great, so it's the same price as Netflix, but they have 1% of the content. So that's what I'm saying. So these are the issues here. Yeah. So whatever. You know, that's just the way it goes, I guess. I think there will be a streaming service crash eventually.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. The issue that these services are creating right now is that it's almost all the way back to the days where we paid $25 for CDs back then, and then eventually the Napster era happened, mm-hmm. and then we're where we are right now, where people kept pirating music to the point where finally record companies caved, and yeah. we have these streaming services now. You can buy songs for a dollar. So yeah. music in general is cheaper. I think we are running to that point eventually where there's just so many streaming services out there that people only pirate when they feel like they're not getting their value's worth.
Yeah, like look at PC gaming.
Yeah.
PC gaming was just about extinct, and then Steam brought it back, and like I don't know barely anyone who bothers and pirates PC games now because it's just so much more convenient to have it on Steam.
Yeah, if you make a service convenient and affordable for people, more people will buy it, more money will come your way.
And now buying music is the same way. Like I don't really know many people at all who pirate music, whereas
no.
15 years ago, everyone
yes.
pirated their music.
Yes.
And now it's just, like you said, they've made it to the point, they caved in, and now it's to the point where it's so easy to buy music that, okay, just about first of all, Amazon, if you buy a CD or a vinyl on Amazon, it comes with the MP3s.
Yeah.
You have it in your Amazon Music library already off the bat. So right then and there, it's like you get the best of both worlds. And it encourages you to buy the CD that they want you to buy. Not to mention the fact, if you do just want to buy an album and an MP3 or whatever, it's like $8. And like on Amazon, usually, it's like $8, $9. And typically, most of these providers, when you buy the MP3 or whatever, they have it, you just download it whenever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, it makes it more simple, and hopefully we're getting to a point where TV gets there as well, but right now it's a total clusterfuck. So one last thing I'd like to bring up, just because, you know, I'm a fan, I'm excited, and that is Space Jam 2 has a release date.
Oh, it does.
Have you heard about this?
No, of course not.
No?
No.
You're not a Space Jam nut?
Not a nut. I mean, I was a kid at one point.
Well, you know, I love basketball.
Yes.
And I like Space Jam.
Are you legit excited about this?
I wouldn't say I'm super excited yeah, about it, but like, it's Space Jam 2.
Yeah.
You're not a little bit excited about it?
I can't even watch that movie, like, ironically.
That movie is I watched it a couple years ago. That movie is an hour and a half long commercial.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. It's not even funny to watch.
I forget what they're advertising in it the whole time, but it's like, I don't even remember, but I remember watching it recently, and it's just a nonstop commercial.
Nonstop commercial.
Yeah. But Space Jam 2 has a date, July 16th, 2021. It's starring LeBron James,
mm-hmm.
the Michael Jordan of this generation. No question about that. And looks like Bugs and Lola are back, baby.
All right.
They're on the poster.
Good.
Bugs and Lola, Space Jam 2, July 16th, 2021. Put it in your calendar.
All right.
That's it? You don't have anything to say about Space Jam 2?
What can I say about Space Jam?
What can't you say about Space Jam?
That it's good?
All right, what else you been up to? Now we're done with the news. What have you been doing, pal? What have you been playing, man?
Oh, God, video game-wise, I'm still playing Iconoclast. I'm not going to talk about that. But I will say that I have been really deep in that Tetris 99.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, really liking it. I finally got number two.
We get the full endorsement from for Tetris 99. Do you get any pat on the back or anything for placing in the top three?
I mean, it says it's your place. It's a very bare bones game.
You don't get anything?
No.
Man. Nothing at all.
Maybe I'll let you know when I get that number one spot. But, yeah, we talked about in the last podcast that the game is so super vague when you start it up. You don't know anything about what to do. But once you understand the dynamic of the game, it becomes a lot more clear about, you get more strategies behind you. Because traditionally in Tetris, I usually would just, like, stack up a bunch and just try to get as many Tetris as I can.
Tetrinos.
And that's not really the case for this one. You have to really be strategic about it. Although, and I'm still learning new things about this game. I didn't even know that in handheld mode that you can touch the screen. And I know you can touch the screen, but I'm saying you can touch the actual
person. You can do it with the left stick as well.
I know you can do that, but that was just like, whenever I saw that, I'm like, when am I going to have time to move around the stick and for target somebody?
If you were a pro.
Right.
If you want that one spot, you'll do
it. That's true. So, yeah, I think I will be playing this more in handheld mode to try that out because, yeah, the auto target system, I don't feel like it's perfect, and I would love to be... And you always know when someone's near death, too, because their little block starts glowing red.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just all about being aggressive at the right times and getting the badges and not putting yourself in a spot where you get the badges too early and then everybody wants to kill you quickly.
Right.
So if you make one mistake, you're done. So... Yeah,
that's why people like all targeted me at once.
I've had multiple games where it just starts and people are just like, "Okay, I just started this game, but yeah. I guess I'm dead already." But you just have to be quick. And
they didn't like the cut of your jib.
I guess not. So it's a really addicting game, and I'm very happy with it. One thing that I will eventually put a bullet in my brain over is the fact that you can't change the music or anything.
Oh yeah.
Is it? It's just one. Some people one track.
Have theorized that that's where they're going to get their money.
I am perfectly fine.
Is by charging for extra tracks and skins.
I'll pay you a dollar or two to change the track and skin. I will. I absolutely will. The game is fun enough that I don't mind. Like if they're like, oh, we got like a Zelda skin and it plays like a cool Zelda track. Whatever, I'll buy it.
Anything to change the song.
Anything. Please take my money and get this out of here.
Yeah.
So. Because at this point in time, I would have bought this game.
Cool. So yeah.
What are you playing? Are you still playing that Resident Evil?
I am, because I haven't had time to play much. Yeah. So I played and finished Reverie. Put that review up over at analogoutmedia.com.
Mm.
And I gave my lukewarm recommendation.
I enjoyed the review. It was good.
Yeah? Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
I own the Vita physical copy of it, so eventually I'll play it.
If I had read my review, I would not have bought the physical copy of it, but to each his own. Yeah. So, I gave it a review of like, yeah, try it out.
Well, I mean, it's like a $12, $13 game.
Yeah, if you don't buy the physical copy.
I don't know what you're trying to do right now. You always try to make me regret my decisions.
Thank you.
Whether it be buying Reverie or giving you a TurboGrafx Express.
I could really make you regret it. I could just like smash it.
I mean, yeah, that'd be pretty douchey.
It'd be like, you'd just be like, well, I wish I didn't give it
I'd
to
be like,
anymore.
All right, well, I'm never giving that guy anything anymore. I wouldn't let you hold on to my games or anything.
You know what's funny is I've thought about... And we can cut this out if you want, but we've talked about it a few times with what would you do if you're like, or what would happen if your brother found out you gave me that Turbo Express, and then you've like brought it up a few times in the podcast now. I don't know if he listens to the audio.
He doesn't listen
podcast
to the
or not, but it would be funny if he did. Like, just picture him with his headphones on and then just like immediately throwing them off and running downstairs and pointing at your parents. So, yeah. I'm looking forward. I'm gonna dig into that. I have too much shit, man. Every time I want to play a game, it's like, well, I got podcasts to edit or videos to edit and stuff, and it's
tough, man. I mean,
yeah.
I rarely have a moment where I'm like, all right, I'm gonna sit down and play this game for a while.
Well, and Resident Evil is one of those games that you can't just pop into because of the saving system and stuff. It's like I can't just get on there and with no and just be like, well, I could just put it down if I you know, it's not like that. So
it's a shame for me. I'm really loving Iconoclast, and like I had a moment where I pulled it out for work for a moment. We had a little bit of downtime, and I was facing a boss, and I was loving every minute of it, but I have limited time. So
one thing that I do is with the way my time works is that I will been watching more movies lately. I just rewatched the Matrix trilogy.
Nice.
And boy, is that is that last movie a stinker. I think I'd only seen it once when it first came out.
I've only seen the first Matrix movie.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a good one. First one's good.
I've seen it.
It's a cool concept.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot. And then the second one is watchable. It's fine. The second one is a decent movie if you're like saw the first one and you were curious about what his powers would be like once he...
Yeah.
That's what the second one is, basically. It's just like, okay, well, I spent the last 2 fucking hours listening about how great this guy's supposed to be, and then as soon as he unlocks his powers, the movie ends.
Yeah.
So, the second movie is just, it's just like superhero movie. The third movie is dog shit. It is 2 hours of climax, where it's just 2 hours of giant CGI battle and stuff, and it's just,
ooh, boy.
And man, it is never ending. It is non-stop. Just non-stop mindless action to the point where you're just bored. And that's what's always funny about those major action movies, like, you know, whether it be Transformers or some of the Marvel movies, specifically the DC movies, where these battles just go on and they took millions of man hours and hundreds of millions of dollars to make this battle, and you're just bored.
Oh, you know what? Now that you mention it, I actually did watch the first episode of Umbrella Academy.
You know, is that like a Resident Evil show?
No, I thought it too. No, it's based off this comic book series that I guess God, I don't want to get it wrong, but apparently one of the guys in My Chemical Romance, I don't know if the lead singer or not, that's what people get turned off of it.
Yeah, because they're quickly losing interest.
Yeah, exactly. As it happens, people find out that he was involved in the creating of this comic. But I actually really liked it.
Yeah.
And you know me, I don't like comic book. Like,
is it a live action or?
It's live action.
Okay.
And so it's. I'll give you the brief summary real quickly. So basically, it's just these around the world, 40+ women just started giving birth for no logical scientific reason. Like they had no. They were all. I think all of them were virgins. So basically, like 40
Jesuses
basically is what happened. So
like Highlander.
So crazy rich guy goes around the world and tries to buy up as many of these kids as he can,
because
he's like, these kids have to be like incredible. There's got to be something going on here. and
he's just stuck with a house full of average kids.
Well, he buys 7 of them, and it turns out, yeah, they do have like superpowers and stuff. So except one of them, apparently, who's played by Ellen Page.
That kid just sucks.
I don't know too much. It was an introduction episode, but yeah. So the show starts out with spoilers alert, because it within the first minute you find out that the father is died, and you don't know the death, you don't know why he's dead.
Okay.
And all that stuff. So all the
one fathered all 40.
No, I'm talking about the father. By father, I mean the guy who purchased these kids. So all of them come back together, and it's clear that a lot of stuff went down between their childhood and where they are now as adults. Like, one of them's like a complete shithead, like a drug addict, and one of them is just like a complete kind of just like a sarcastic scumbag, possibly involved in crime. And you get flash forwards and flashbacks of their childhood and when they were like these prodigy, like raised to be superhero kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of gives me that Watchmen vibe where it's just like that, you know, this has been done to death at this point. Where
do they have like mild superhero powers? Where it's like Watchmen, where it's just kind of based in reality, with the exception of the Dr. Manhattan or whatever. We're just like one's like kind of super smart, one's like stronger than everyone else, or is it just like they're just superheroes?
It's hard to say. I didn't really get a look at all their powers yet. They don't reveal all their powers right away. All
right,
like one of their powers you don't even see it's second of the show.
I think they really missed out on an opportunity here, because I think it would have been a lot more entertaining and funnier if he like went and like bought up like 20 of these kids,
and
then they're just like normal kids, and he just like Great. He just has 20 random orphans running around his house.
Yeah.
That don't nothing special about them.
Hey, it sounds like a I don't know, like a Beethoven type movie.
It sounds like a very like 80s sitcom, like yeah. Alf or whatever.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe we can produce that together. But the first episode was actually pretty good. I recommend it.
What is it? A TV show or
it's on Netflix?
Okay, so it's a Netflix produced.
It's plastered
show.
All over Netflix. You can't not see it when you turn on Netflix right
now. Oh, is this the one with the African American girl on the cover?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I have heard of this show. I
think you'd like it.
Saw an article that was like, this is the best Netflix show that has been made.
I mean, it's getting a lot of buzz, but...
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah. The only reason I watched it, Lars, like, raved about it, and I all right, sure, I'll watch an episode. And I did, and yeah. I liked it.
I'm currently watching True Detective Season 3.
Okay.
Because True Detective Season 1 is one of my favorite TV shows of all time.
Oh.
Have you seen that?
Nope.
I've suggested it to you a few times.
Yes, I think you have, yeah.
So with Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good. It's an anthology series, so you can just watch the first season and not watch anything else. That's why I'm watching this one, because the second season was panned and said it was not good, and I don't like to waste my time with mediocre shows. So I was like, whatever, I don't need to watch this because it has nothing to do with the last season. And then the new one came out, and everyone said it was amazing and even has been compared to, like, Twin Peaks as far as, like, tone and stuff. And I was like, okay, well, and then our old pal and friend of the show, Michael Neely, was like, because I was the one who told him about the first season of True Detective, I believe, and he watched on my recommendation, and then he really liked it. And then he sent me a text and was like, have you been watching the new season of True Detective? And I said, no. He's like, it's really, really good. It might be as good as the first one. I haven't decided yet. And so I put that on, and I've been watching the first two episodes of that. So
nice.
It's an eight-episode series.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, you always have my interest when you tell me about a show that's not long.
Definitely check out that first season when you do eventually finish Sopranos.
Hey, I've been trying to watch it. Your server hasn't been working lately.
Oh, why didn't you say something?
I didn't want to bother you with that.
Okay. Well, anyway. All right. Well, on that note, if you guys made it this far, I want to thank you and give you a digital e-hug for hacking it out with us and tuning in. I want to thank you for subscribing. I want you to please, please go ahead and leave that 5-star review. Follow me on Twitter at ProjectPat88. That's Project with a K. You can follow us on Instagram at AnalogOutPodcast. And we have a website where we post all of our podcasts, all of our videos, news articles, reviews, and all that kind of shit. That website is what, Bowman?
It's analogoutmedia.com.
Thank you. You can get, we have links there. You could subscribe on all the major podcast apps and such. So thank you again for listening. And Bowman, what do you have to say?
I just want you guys to log on that website. Give that Reverie review a read because it's good. And stay tuned. I actually will be receiving a childhood game remaster that I want to share my thoughts on. So stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys, and have a goddamn good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Logout.